Portage Health Foundation is proud to introduce you to do-good volunteer Carol Jones. Jones is a former teacher that now donates her time to help students at Horizons High School in Mohawk. The students refer to her as Grandma during her weekly visits. With patience and compassion, she has helped many students gain a diploma. A common statement from Horizons graduates is, "Without Grandma Jones, I would never have made it." If you know an incredible volunteer like Carol, go to dogoodcc.org and nominate them to be recognized as the next Do Good in the Copper Country Volunteer of the Month.
Welcome back to segment two of Copper Country Today. The firearm deer hunting season opens in just a couple of days. Oh my word, the year has flown on by. And of course, with the firearm deer season coming up, there are always some changes in the rules, some changes in the regulations. We want to bring everybody up to date before you get out into the woods. So we welcome back to the program from the Michigan DNR, John DePew, biologist, and Mark Pomeroy, conservation officer. Welcome back to the show, both of you.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Let's get started. Of course, 15th is what, Tuesday?
Yes, Tuesday.
Tuesday, so the clock is ticking. I'm sure we've got people already opening things up at camp and getting things ready for the season coming up. Not as many people as we've had before. I noticed some figures that came out from the DNR recently that showed over the last few years a pretty steep decline in the number of hunters. This is of how much concern to the DNR at this point?
Well, the 10-year trend is declining, not only in Michigan, but across North America, right?
It's not just us. I can speak for
you know, the United States anyway, but I'm sure I haven't seen data for Canada. It's very similar, right? So just the number of hunters are declining and getting older. And so those numbers are starting to decrease as folks kind of age out. But that said, the number of licenses that we've sold, deer hunting licenses this year at this point, compares with the same number of licenses we sold last year. So we're on par, at least last year to this year, which is good. So maybe we're starting to stabilize, you know, the number of hunters. The decline is kind of stabilizing. But some research shows that we have a few more years in the decline. And it's certainly a concern because there's a whole number of factors that deer hunting's important culturally, economically, ecologically, nuisance issues, etc. Some things we can try to help, and other forces that are outside of the DNR's control we can't influence.
Well, and you're right, because there are places where the deer population does need to be controlled. It will get out of hand. Just ask the people who live in Ann Arbor. They've been fighting it right in Ann Arbor for years and trying to figure out what to do about it humanely. But there are a lot of places, not necessarily here in the Western UP, but downstate, that are just overrun. There are farmers who'll pay you to hunt their land to try to thin the herd out.
Yeah, well, even here, there's places in the Upper Peninsula. There are certainly some places where there's still deer are causing a number of agricultural damage. So it's not just Lower Peninsula.
My neighbor's garden would fall into that.
Garden would fall into that.
Frankly, I see more deer, and I have on my commute to work over the last 18 months have hit three along US 41. But I see more deer any place in my yard in downtown Lawrence. Because they're just, they like being there. And my neighbor has an apple tree, and that they like apples.
Sure. So there's food, the deer will go.
Yep. They're cute. I love to look at them, but they can be destructive, and they can eat your garden and your flowers and things of that nature. How does the DNR determine what an appropriate level for deer population is in an area?
Well, there's biological. And then there's like a term that's called like social carrying capacity. And that basically kind of touches that, you know, how many deer can the people or society handle on the landscape, right? So how much damage can farmers stand? How many car collisions or gardens or rose bushes or that kind of thing? So those all kind of play into it. I mean, certainly there are places that ecologically you can have a higher number of deer, right? Greater deer abundance in places where there's a lot of food, and places where there's less food, right? There are the ability to handle less deer. So it's kind of, you know, the bigger picture is when we're setting you know, for the most part, we play, you know, we have in statute the ability for hunters to take two deer, and then the DNR can adjust the through point restrictions and that kind of thing, and how that structure is made through a regulatory process. But then the other thing that we look at is how we can regulate doe harvest, right? So so one of the ways we do that is we look at trends and indices over time, and we have their deer management units. And if you recall, a few years ago, we allowed some deer harvest. So we broke the Upper Peninsula up in different zones, South Zone, Middle Zone, and Northern Zone. Yeah. And we look at different surveys that we do in harvest reporting and different indices to see where, and then we look at winter and weather and all kinds of factors, right? And then, you know, that's why we have these access permits for those different zones where we want to be able to, we want to allow doe harvest. So for example, in this middle zone, we want to allow doe harvest opportunity for deer hunters to be able to take some does, but we can't have it completely open because it's right on the line where, you know, winter has a factor, wolves have a factor, bears have a factor, coyotes, you name it, right? Everything has a factor. It's not huge agriculture, so it's not like it's downstate, right?
Right.
So we want to be able to limit how many does you could take. And so that's how we kind of came up with this, looking at those. And every few years, we look at it again and have these access permits, right? Everyone get a doe tag. It's just where, you know, we limit the number of does that can essentially be taking in certain zones where there's a potential concern, right? So for over-harvest.
Does the prospect of illness, disease, come into this? We've had chronic wasting disease. We've had a couple of other things that have begun to infect the deer herd. And we've had some areas, I know, even in the UP, where baiting has been forbidden. Hunter's not happy about that in many cases, but how much role does that play?
Well, you know, in the UP numbers, in the CWD core zone, we have not at this point, like, completely opened up or ramped up or had a desire to kill a lot more deer in those zones yet, since our one index case a few years ago. You know, there's the potential for that in the future, right? Density-dependent disease can be an issue. Downstate, that's a bigger issue where they have, you know, really high deer densities.
Yes.
And they have CWDs and TB are prevalent. So that comes into play downstate. Up here in the UP, where, you know, certainly we're doing some things to try to reduce exposure. We're still sampling, right? We have another year of CWD sampling in the core zones. But we haven't found the need to like incorporate that disease or the need to like reduce the deer herd for disease at this point.
Okay. Are we still looking at some areas in the UP where baiting is going to be prohibited this year?
In the core CWD zones.
Yeah. Nothing has changed since last year on those closed areas.
Okay, so that's not really here in the Copper Country, as I recall. I haven't looked at the map yet this year, but it's down towards Escanaba, down towards Menominee in that area,
that's
as
correct.
I recall.
That's correct.
Yep.
So if you're going down that direction, you'd probably need to check the map. But if you're up in our area, that at least is something that we don't need to worry too much about. Rules change. Seems like every year there are some new rules, and the one that I'm hearing about from a lot of people, Mark Pomeroy, is this new reporting rule where you shoot the deer, you have to report it within a certain time period, you have to give certain information, and people are saying to me, you know, maybe in the UP this isn't viable, we don't have internet at camp, we don't have cell phone service at camp and such. Explain, well, what is required now?
Sure, and I think the biggest thing to get out there is for everybody to take a deep breath, relax. It's nothing that's very intrusive. The first reaction from people was, why do we all have to give our information out? And part of that answer is because that's what hunters have asked for years. They want spot-on data. They don't want predictions or guesswork. So if you're going to report how many deer are shot and killed, it's going to be spot-on data. So, and that's exactly what it is. We don't use it for law enforcement purposes. It's all for biological data collection. So,
this all plays in then to what John was talking about in terms of trying to guide the herd, make sure that everything stays healthy.
Correct. And many other states utilize it. So we're kind of catching up with a lot of other states that have incorporated this. It works. It's simply going to take you a matter of minutes once you get online to enter your data. So that's the biggest message to get out is it's not difficult. It's here to stay. So you best just adjust to it this year. But also realize it's not an immediate registration. You have a large enough window in there to get your data in there, and we don't care if it's within the last couple minutes of the time frame. You don't have to register it within an hour of shooting a deer. You have plenty of time to get that deer registered.
72 hours.
Yeah, because believe me, at my camp, ain't nothing happening in the air out there that's sure going to connect you to any place. Yeah. So, and that's what I've heard about people. Hey, I'm going to be out at camp. I'm going to be out there the whole week. I'm not going to be back in range within 72 hours, although I suspect that most people will at least head into the store or to the bar or someplace like that. How long does it take to fill out? What specific type of information are you asking for?
It's very, very basic. You're going to enter a number off of your license for your license number, because if you have a combo tag, they're two separate numbers for two separate deer registrations. And it's just very, very basic information after that. And a location is one of them.
How specific do you need to be with the location? I've heard some people say that you want GPS coordinates or things of that nature.
Well, how it works is there's a little finger on the screen. And the way it was determined, they felt that's probably going to be the easiest way for people to do it versus looking at a map. And if you're close to a deer management unit, you might not know exactly what unit number you're in. But if you move your little finger around and place it approximately where you shot your deer, that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for specific exact GPS numbers. They're there with the little arrow that you move around, but it's for simplicity of the subject that's going to be registering a deer. You can move it. Technology, move it on your phone, move your finger around, drop your pin, and it automatically assigns your deer management unit.
Because I had people come up and say to me, they said, I can't get GPS information. My phone doesn't work where I'm hunting. So they don't need that.
Nope. It's just on a touch screen or a mouse on a computer. You can move your little finger around and drop your pin location approximately where you harvested your deer. And the program takes the information from there.
That is certainly... Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll say additionally this year, you know, we have staff at our offices. Right, so our customer service offices, centers.
That's good to have again after some COVID not too long ago, and you guys were all shut down and working out of your cars.
Yeah, so we're there, and we have staff on hand to help people report their deer harvest, so they can come to the office, and they can help you with your device, they can help you on our devices, and if you just can't make it to the office and you don't have a smartphone or you don't have good reception, you can call the office in Barraga. And office staff there will be able to help you or register your deer or report your deer over the phone. So 353-6651 will get you to the Barraga office, 8 to 5, and those office staff.
And I also believe they're going to incorporate an automated system there for when you contact the office. If somebody doesn't answer, they're going to set it up where you press a certain number. It's all automated. And it'll walk you through and gather your information without talking to the secretary. So we're doing the best that we can for every option possible just to get people used to it, make it user-friendly, and gather our exact data.
Well, and the upside then will be more accurate management of the deer herd. Hopefully, in some cases, perhaps more deer, where we can have better hunting because of this. Talk to me about where the deer are this year and where they aren't.
They're out in the woods, or in the farm fields.
Is that where they are?
In the riverbank.
Because in my case, for the last 18 months, they've been standing in front of me on US 41. So,
yeah, you know, I think coming out of last winter, we were pretty concerned. It was not like a record snowfall year, but winter lasted a long time, in here in the Copper Country anyway, right?
Yeah.
So the number of days with snow on the ground was pretty extended. And so there's fear when there's that, you know, when the deer are like being forced into those deer wintering complexes for a long period of time, that can have an issue. You know, that said, I think, you know, points north of the bridge, Keweenaw, you know, North Houghton County, I think those deer are, the deer numbers are down up there. Surprisingly and interestingly, even Hancock-ish and points a little further south and east, the deer fared better than we expected, right? There's a lot of fawns, a lot of twin fawns with does. You know, the farm country of the Baraga, Pelkey, Nisqually area, there's plenty of deer in that area. I think, you know, the winter was long in Keweenaw County, and the deer numbers are a little bit lower there.
Because late snow cover is really tough on those deer, having kind of starved through the winter, looking forward to beginning to feed in late March or April. If they can't get that going, that's when they really get stressed, isn't it?
That's when they really get stressed. Their fat reserves are gone, and they're stressed. And, yeah, so lingering snow on the ground. Not like patches of snow. When there's snow on the ground, and it seemed this year through the end of April, and even into May, yeah, it was...
Yeah, and I think you need to keep in mind in the area that you hunt in. If you hunt in an area where your deer travel to a deer yard, many of those deer were still in a deer yard in the first week of May or in that close vicinity. So the snow stretched very long. So in those areas where your deer travel, the high snowfall areas, I think your numbers are going to be down for sure.
The deer yards legitimately helpful? I know a lot of people in this area put a lot of effort and time into maintaining those, the one up around Eagle River. I see an awful lot of deer when I'm up there traveling back and forth to Copper Dog 150. I see an awful lot of deer there. Do they make a significant difference?
They can serve a purpose. So I think when you talk about, you know, maybe there's two different constructs, right? There's deer wintering complexes, which are large complexes of deer wintering habitat, including cover and food, and they do serve a significant purpose. And then we have different places that are feeding sites, which are usually concentrating deer. So it can be helpful. Also, it can be also stress. Even though they're getting food, it can be stressful over a long period of time to have deer in a close proximity to each other for extended periods of time. So it's kind of like we could talk about this for hours, because we do manage on state land and encourage private landowners to manage like their lands on deer wintering complexes in a manner to benefit deer. And in this high snowfall zones, those complexes are absolutely necessary.
Yeah, and I would assume once you get one started, you're kind of obligated to keep it going, at least for a while. You don't want to all of a sudden in February stop putting stuff out and those deer are sitting out there going, hey, wait a minute.
So you're talking about feeding. Yeah, if you start feeding and you have deer there in December, you want to feed them right through till the snow is gone, which could be until the middle of May.
Yes.
So you got to take that into account when you're looking, because it can get expensive and it could be a big effort. So yeah, you can't, like, you know, you gotta have the forethought to think this could, you know, and the other thing that happens, right, you start with 5 deer and then there's 10 in January.
Deer.
Next thing you know, you got 25 or 40 middle February. And now you're like, you got to feed those things.
Do they have memory? Do they come back next year?
In general, they will.
Okay. So if you're really starting to get into it, you may be stuck with something for...
Well, if they come back and you decided like that last year was too much, don't even start in November feeding them.
Yeah.
They'll find other places.
Yeah.
Hopefully, but yeah, don't even start like, oh, I'm just going to put a little out. And then next thing you know, we get a big snowstorm and they're stuck again.
Talking with John DePue and Mark Pomeroy from the DNR, the firearm deer hunting season opens up on Tuesday. Mark, you're the conservation officer. Are there other new rules that people need to be aware of this year? And what do they need to do perhaps to stay out of trouble with you that might be different, new and different?
Sure, I can cover that topic. This year, I think, is a fairly simple year for regulations. We don't have any major changes that affect anything locally. Some areas in lower Michigan had a few changes to antler point restrictions, but since the last couple years of a few minor changes, we have nothing significant for this year. So that's a good thing. But with that said, I always encourage people, pick up a guidebook, bring it back to camp with you, or read your guidebook at home. We try to keep everything in there. It just refreshes your memory on some of our basic regulations. And, you know, our biggest focus is on safety this time of year. We want everybody to have a fun deer season. If you're fortunate to harvest a deer, that's great, but we want everybody to be safe and enjoy it. So,
what if I make a mistake? I think that that's a buck, but it turns out that's just sticks in the tree behind, kind of looking like antlers, and I shoot the doe and I don't have the doe permit. What if I screw up? Am I going to be in trouble?
Yes, but to what extent? Like I said, mistakes happen. And the biggest thing I can say is if you make a mistake, it's an honest mistake, give us a call. We're people just like you are. We'll walk through it. But don't dig your hole any deeper from the start. Give us a call. We have our report, our poaching hotline number. One of our local conservation officers will come out, meet with you, and we'll walk through the situation and what happened. Every situation is different. So,
and remember, the start time and end time each day is actually a little different.
Correct.
Because it's related to local sunrise. Years ago, my first radio job, I had a guy call me up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I got the first buck of the season, he said. I said, I'll do you a favor and not tell anybody because it doesn't start yet. So you got to watch those hours.
And all we have a time chart in our guidebook. You can also use your smart device to find sunrise for your area and make your adjustment from there for legal shooting hours. Fortunately, our shooting hours are very, very close to when you could actually physically see. So yeah. It's within minutes, but by law, you do have to know when it starts and ends each day. So
let's run down some basic safety reminders as we get towards the end of the segment here for folks going up handling firearms.
Correct. Treat every firearm like we tell you in hunter safety, like it's loaded. Be familiar with your firearm. If you're going to be wearing gloves, that throws in a whole different situation there. It might be dark out. So the biggest thing, just be familiar with your firearm and treat it safely. Respect the firearm. And fortunately, we haven't had any incidents lately, but be aware of what you're shooting at is another safety issue we've had.
Indeed.
I've had the unfortunate situation of going to a scene where a person wasn't cautious of what they were shooting at. We just be cautious. And that ties right into wearing your hunter's orange.
Yeah, I was going to say the flip side of that.
Correct.
Is even if you're not hunting, if you're going out into the woods, make sure that you are visible.
Correct. And, the idea of trying to hide from deer during deer season, you have a firearm in your hand. Don't worry about that. The more orange you can wear to be visible, it's not only going to help you, it's going to help other hunters. It is the law. You have to have a hat, jacket, cap, or a vest of hunter's orange. You can't wear pants to cover it because if you sit down, you can't see your bibs or your hunting pants. So on your upper half of your body. And the more you can wear of hunter's orange, the better. Like
yeah.
I said, deer see in shades of gray anyway. So they're
They're not scared by the orange.
Correct.
They don't see it the way that we see it.
I can't stress it enough. If you wear a hat, it meets the requirements of the law. But just remember, if you have a small beanie hat on, you step behind a tree or branch, and the rest of your outfit is camouflage, somebody might not see you. So be safe and wear as much orange as you can for that firearm deer season.
Going out into the woods, we have areas, obviously, even if you carry a cell phone with you, it's not going to be trackable. We've had situations over the last few years where people have gone out and not come back. It's a challenge to find you if you go out there and you don't come back. How should people handle that trip out into the woods?
The biggest thing is let somebody know where you're going. It's very simple. You can send a text to somebody in your camp. If you change stand locations, if you're going somewhere else, let somebody know where you're going to hunt and be as specific as you can for the simple idea. If you don't come back, where do we start looking for you? The terrain is very rural. It's large. And if we have no clue where you went, it just puts us farther behind in our search to try and get you out of the woods. So let somebody know where, when, and how you're going, when you're going to be back, and just hope you never need it. But if you get into that habit, if something ever happened, it will greatly speed up our search efforts for you.
And if you're old and overweight like me, please don't all of a sudden assume that you're 35 years old and fit and spry and go out through the deep snow, because we have situations each year where people suffer heart attacks, things like that out there. And it's because in many cases they've overdone it.
Correct.
So in any event, we got to wrap this up here. Any closing thoughts real quickly?
I'll just close with one last violation we see a lot is just know where you're hunting. You're responsible to know, are you on public land, private land? If you're going to hunt private land, you have to have permission. So the biggest thing is know where your boots are going to be on the ground. It's up to the hunter to be knowledgeable if they have permission to be where they're at. So
I'm hoping everybody go ahead.
Yeah, Tom. I just want to mention to that effort, we have a great tool called MI Hunt. So if you just Google search MI Hunt, it's a Michigan DNR webpage, and you can see all of the CF land, commercial forest land, that allows you to hunt. You can see all the Forest Service land that allows you to hunt, and all of the Michigan DNR land, or any land that is open to hunting. You can see. It's an amazing tool. Use it.
Check it out, and we hope everybody has a safe and successful hunt. John DePue and Mark Pomeroy, thank you for coming in on Copper Country today.